Cecilia Allfelt. I'm a certified customer experience professional. I advise businesses on how to drive growth and remain competitive in the age of the customer. Earlier this year, I had the opportunity to speak with Kevin Seaman, who is the National Patient Experience Manager at MediClinic. MediClinic is an international hospital group with a footprint spanning Southern Africa, the Middle East, and Europe. MediClinic has made patient experience an integral part of their corporate strategy, and Kevin has been on the forefront of these efforts, designing and implementing a number of programs to drive patient-centric transformation. What impresses me the most about MediClinic's approach is their combination of depth and breadth. Many organizations get stuck focusing on just one aspect of customer experience management, but Kevin and his team have done an excellent job of driving change from a variety of different angles. This is the key to success, regardless of the industry in question. So I hope that Kevin's insights will inspire customer experience leaders to do the same. Please note that at the time of our conversation, MediClinic was just getting settled into their stunning new office space in Stellenbosch, South Africa. So if you happen to hear the occasional faint hammering noise in the background, that was it. Without further ado, here is my interview with Kevin. Hi, this is Julia Allfelt. I'm a customer experience specialist and advisory consultant speaking with Kevin Seaman today. Kevin is the National Patient Experience Manager at MediClinic. He's been at MediClinic for 22 years, and he's responsible for patient experience management and continual improvement and driving culture change within the organization. So before I jump into questions about the work that you've been doing here at MediClinic, patient experience or customer experience is a relatively new field of work. I'm always fascinated by the diversity of professional backgrounds and career paths that I encounter when I meet new people in this field. So how did you personally get involved with patient experience?
I've always been fairly passionate about the old terminology topic of customer service. And in fact, the last hospital that I ran before I came into this position was in a highly competitive environment. And in fact, our physical equipment and size meant that we could only compete on a service level. We couldn't compete on any other level with the closest hospital. So it was a case of a really enhanced understanding of the fact that we needed to do something special to get the customer to come back. So when the company started talking about it, started off as patient journey, when they started talking about that, it really resonated with me. And in fact, the guy in charge at the time, I said to him, if we get this right, we're going to fly. And he always remembered that, interestingly. But there wasn't an option terms of the business that I ran.
That's very cool. So it sounds like patient experience is a major focus for MediClinic. Can you share how this came about and what patient experience means for the organization?
It came about with the company rebranding itself from a marketing perspective, and then the realization that actually a brand was not just a bit of writing on a wall or a marketing image. It needed to stand for something. And when we rebranded the company about 6 years ago, we decided that how we wanted to bring this brand to life was through the patient's experience of us and our organization. And that's really what drove the initiative up front. And it has become a major focus. It was a decision that was made to make it a focus in terms of the organization. But subsequent to that, it has become a major focus in terms of the strategy, in terms of what the company is trying to do.
That's great. So how has the patient experience function, so sort of the your portfolio of responsibilities, how has that evolved to where it is today?
The journey was quite interesting because what it started off as was us getting together pockets of excellence throughout the company and taking a look at the major processes through which a customer or a patient would go and saying to our people, okay, so what would you do to improve this in terms of your role? And that was really the first step, because what came out of that was 339 different ideas and 227 new processes, at which point the executive said, well, hang on a sec, we need to get somebody to run this, because this is clearly bigger than just a couple of weeks exercise. And then, although I was part of the company, I became almost a consultant. I mean, fully employed, but on the outside, consulting to the organization to say, these are the initiatives we need to look at and all that kind of stuff. And that has morphed into becoming two things, a strategy plus a business as usual department. And at that point, we went through an exercise where we said our client services officers or managers, it was no longer actually clever to call them that, because that was not what we were doing. And so in each hospital, we changed that name to a patient experience manager, and they have a dotted discipline reporting line to me, although they report to the operational specialist in each hospital. but it became a business as usual department where we're focusing on maximizing the patient experience, as well as the old focus, which is new major strategies and initiatives to improve the patient experience. Okay. So there's a consulting strategy arm almost and a business as usual.
That's great. And then just out of curiosity, how did you prioritize all of those different sort of findings and objectives? This is something that I find very often with clients. It's when you lift up the bonnet and you start looking at what's going on and, you know, orienting the business more around the end user, the patient or the customer, it can be overwhelming. What you find at first, it's like, oh geez, we haven't done any maintenance on this for a while. We need to fix it. So how did you guys prioritize that?
Interestingly, a parallel initiative that was happening at the company is there were a couple of industrial engineers in the company that went through the outside in technology kind of discipline through the PE group. And what we did was we sat down and we looked at those 339 ideas and processes and we grouped them into what would for us be a natural fit. And then we used the outside in principles of actually walking through an entire hospital in terms of the patient journey. And from an outside in point of view, we then characterized those things or categorized them together.
Okay.
So the 339 became 37 major priorities, and we defined them by the outside in terminology, and then we gave them back to operations and said, okay, so what's important to you? What do you think from an operational point of view in hospitals are the critical factors? And that was the beginning. The beginning was prioritizing those according to the operations. It's become a lot more sophisticated since then with our data research and our patient surveys and stuff. It's now a lot more focused. But interestingly, through our learning for the first 2 or 3 years, we were pretty on track with the correct priorities.
That's fabulous.
And in fact, we've moved on to, and I think we'll get to that, but our measurement tool is the Press Ganey system. Mm-hmm. And pretty much they confirmed what we were doing, which was really great.
Oh, that's great.
It's so confirmed we were on the right track, not that we'd arrived by any means.
Yeah, and you'll probably never arrive. That's the thing about
That's one of the learnings, by the way, is you're never going to arrive.
Yeah.
You're never going to get there, ever, because the customer's rights and customer's perceptions of what they deserve, and I buy that, is morphing and improving every day.
Absolutely. I think that's true across industries.
And in fact, that was one of the interesting realizations when I was appointed. The senior guy said to me, we're never going to get there. We've understood that this is not a one-time intervention. We're going to be working on this
forever.
Yeah.
And that can be quite a confronting thing for business leaders to think, right, well, this is actually just the new normal.
Correct.
And the new normal means that we're going to have to be evolving much faster than
Absolutely.
We ever have before. Okay, that's right.
And in fact, this stage of the progression is the easy part because you're kind of working in a space that not much has been done. So whatever you do is paying dividends, if you know what I mean. But it's going to get more and more difficult.
It's quite innovative of you guys to look at things from this outside-in perspective. As I speak with clients and work with companies, that's a major challenge, is just shifting that. What was the sort of level of leadership support along the way with that? With that evolution?
The leadership support has always been fantastic. Mm-hmm. There's been buy-in from a leadership point of view, and the idea came from the senior leadership in any event. What has been interesting, though, is that it's taken a while for the realization to hit that this is not a topic on its own, that it's a culture. And so the way you do things and your terminology and I mean, the biggest lesson for any organization, I guess, is to fully understand that you cannot expect people to behave to customers in a way that's fundamentally different to the way they are treated in the organization. So the entire terminology and culture has got to be absolutely aligned. So if you're an internal person providing a service to somebody who's serving a patient, you'd better be using the same culture as you would expect.
Yeah. This do unto others, you know? That's kind of it's so basic when you peel back the layers of the onion, yet businesses don't do that, you know?
And this is not an initiative, it's a culture. And so you can't be in a meeting and wear your patient experience hat and then take that off and then move on to the next topic.
Yeah.
It's all integrate. And that's a learning that's still carrying on. The very senior guys and the people to whom I report is not a problem, but the realization that this is a constant thing.
Where do you find the most difficulty with that? Where is there the most sort of friction in terms of accepting that this is part of everything that people do in the organization, that it's not a department on its own? Where is that
The most difficult thing, I reckon, and it sounds really basic, but the most difficult thing for me in the South African context is people have a resistance to apologizing. So if you apologize for something, it means that you're wrong and the other person's right. And that fundamentally flies in the face of what we're trying to do, because what we're trying to do is create empathy, which means that if a patient or a client is unhappy with the service, you are sorry. It doesn't mean culpability. And I also think that there's a historical, certainly in our industry, there's an historical belief that if you apologize, you're admitting liability and then you're in trouble. And there's a huge challenge with that. And in fact, we're going to start working on conversations that we need to have with that. I had a conversation with somebody the other day who had a problem with something to do with the building. First thing I said was, oh, I'm really sorry, we'll sort that out. And the response was, no, it's not your problem, no need to apologize. We need to change that conversation to say, thank you for your apology. It's nice of you to apologize, I accept. Because the indirect message is, it's not your fault, so you don't need to apologize, and you do. And sorry if I'm off the topic, but one of the most fabulous examples that I heard recently from a neighbor, and I said to him, I'm going to use it. He said, do you understand that if you go to a funeral, you will go to the widow and say, I'm really sorry for your loss, but you never killed the person. Yeah. And yet you do that with absolute sincerity. And that's what's required from an empathy point of view in terms of service. And I think that is so extremely spot on, because everybody can identify with
that. Absolutely. No, that's a fabulous point. That's a really good point. It's this putting yourself in somebody else's shoes and then taking ownership of what you're doing. And even if things aren't turning out the way that you expect them to, that's...
And so the culture change that we're trying to engender is to say that everybody in this organization, even if they sit with their backs to the room and stare at a computer screen in the corner, must understand that they're co-responsible for the patient experience. And that means you should actually be sorry if we haven't met somebody's expectation.
Absolutely. And in terms of sort of driving that change, what sort of approaches have worked? How have you guys tackled that and other culture change challenges?
The first real port of call was what we did was we've taken the entire leadership team, and by leadership team, I mean in the corporate office, it's everybody that has people reporting to them or responsible for major process within the branches or hospital. Taken them and every single management team in the 52 hospitals. We have taken them through a 1.5-day program called Leading the Patient Experience, where the priority there was to say, okay, we accept that as leadership, you understand what the company is trying to do in terms of strategy, but understand that a portion of this workshop is going to be presented to your staff. So what is it that you need to do to support what your staff are going to go through and what your staff are going to change? And then I'm very pleased to say that our goal was in an 18-19 month period to take 17,000 people through a program called Managing the Patient Experience, a single day, where we set expectations, spoke a lot about outside in, spoke about the purpose of your job within the context of the patient experience, and did some skills practice in terms of how to get empathy and stuff going, to try and talk about the things of the culture. It's now towards the end of January, and we're 14,500 down. So we've
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And then in terms of sort of follow-up after the fact, because one of the things that I see sometimes organizations will do is they'll have a big push to train people, and, you know, maybe there'll be a roadshow or something, and then there's in the follow-through in terms of, you know, how do you track and measure and make sure that these behaviors are really changing. And if you don't do that, it can fall flat. What efforts are you guys doing to make sure that the messaging and the learnings and the good stuff that's happening during those sessions is that people are taking that on board and sort of using it and leveraging it?
That's the phase that we're in at the moment. And in fact, the message that we've got from the users and stuff is, give us a break. So it's going to be,
we're
going to have a 3-month hiatus when we're going to do nothing. We're going to use that 3 months to delve into each of the branches and the hospitals to get feedback about where it's going. And we will start follow-up campaigns and stuff, which will then link far more strongly. What we're going to try and do is link the feedback that we get from our press gainee surveys with the kinds of learnings on those processes, push those together to say, so it won't be a global thing.
Yeah.
So we're going to look at one hospital and say, well, these are your issues and this is how we addressed them in the past. So what are you doing about that? So we'll push the change and give new initiative to each one of the patient experience managers in each hospital.
So it'll then be sort of tailored to the particular circumstance.
Correct.
And it's an interesting point that you bring up around giving people a break too, because I suppose if this information and way of thinking and way of doing business is new, you also have to, from a change management perspective, take into account the fact that things won't change overnight and that you can't overwhelm people, because then the reaction could be negative. It could be a rejection because it's too new, it's too much. And so, you know, you do have to sort of, I guess, curb your enthusiasm a little bit and make sure that it's rolled out in a measured way.
Our other point of focus, though, is the fact that the entire patient experience in a hospital context involves a lot of service providers that are not part of the organization.
Okay.
So the next part of the phase is also going to be about aligning our allied practitioners to the same message.
And that presents a whole host of new challenges because
Correct.
They're not employees and...
Correct. But in terms of understanding the impact on the patient experience, we can no longer hide behind the fact that we're a landlord to a doctor or I don't want to focus on doctors or an allied professional. They are there because we've given them rooms or because we've given them theatre time
yeah.
or whatever. So we can't hide behind the fact that yeah. they're a separate entity because actually we've facilitated the experience. So there's a lot of work that we need to do to align. And can I say that there are a lot of our practitioners that are incredibly aligned anyway. But we just need to make sure that the patient who walks into our hospital doesn't look at us and go, okay, well, that's a MediClinic thing, or that's a catering contractor thing, or that's the radiology, or that's the pathology. The experience is one blanket experience for
sure.
which we are responsible.
That's a great point. A lot of organizations that work with different service providers, they'll think about things in a siloed perspective because that's the way that they manage
Correct.
Operations, but
Correct.
It doesn't necessarily mean that that's the way that the end user looks at it. They look at the brand, they look at the name
Absolutely.
On the door, and they assume that as soon as they walk through that door,
yeah.
everything is under the sort of umbrella of that brand, and they have
yeah.
no idea, and they shouldn't have to. As the end user, it's really not your problem.
Not your problem.
Yeah.
And that's the basis of the outside-in philosophy, is
yeah.
to say you've got to understand it from the patient's perspective. And so what we're trying to do is build an accountability to say that everybody is responsible for the patient experience. So if you are a member of pharmacy and a patient has had a bad experience with administration, doesn't matter. You
yeah.
need to apologize and help facilitate the correction of the problem.
So you mentioned your allied partners and working with physicians. Talk to me a little bit about driving culture change in an organization where the sort of core of the service is heavily reliant on skilled experts who may or may not be very service-oriented.
I think that most of our allied professionals who work in the organization are service-orientated.
Mm-hmm.
I have no problem with that. The problem is the tweaking it, as I said to you before, the difference between being, if you want to use the old terminology of service-orientated, it's the same as customer-centric, if
yeah.
you like. They are all that. It's about tweaking it to the extent that you're looking at it from the patient experience point of
okay.
view. And if you look at it, customer service is almost a linear thing one way from us to the patient
yeah.
or the customer. Experience is about how that service is experienced.
In,
by the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got to tweak that understanding
okay.
to say, yes, we have the expertise, we know better than you do what you require. But the way in which it's done, we might need to tweak for each individual. And that's the issue. That's the challenge.
So getting everybody within the organization, allied partners and others, to look at things from the patient's perspective
Correct.
And really understand how what they're putting out there, the service that they're providing,
yeah.
how that is experienced
Correct.
By the patient and getting people to think about it that way.
And I guess probably one of the easiest ways to understand what we're saying about outside in is to look at the opposite, which is inside out.
Mm-hmm.
And inside out says that I do it to you the way I've experienced the best way to do it is and how my job description tells me to do it. And that doesn't always meet the need, and that's what's got to change. So you don't come from a policy, procedure, organizational, this is the way we've done things perspective. You come from the perspective of how and what that person needs from you.
Any sort of words of wisdom for how to catalyze that change? I'm thinking specifically for others who might be driving change within organizations that have similar structures, perhaps the legal profession, which is also one in which the core service is provided by highly skilled specialists. Any words of wisdom for helping people within the organization look at things from that perspective and driving that change in thinking?
I think the biggest one is to look at those people and understand that it's not on purpose that they're doing it that way, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Being very inside out focused normally comes from years and years of experience and being used to doing things in the same way and trying to do things efficiently. So it can be a very, very, very sincere desire to do the right thing and to be service orientated,
yeah.
but you're just missing the boat completely in
okay.
terms of the person to whom you're providing
yeah.
a service. And so realizing that it's not people that are trying to be obstructive or trying to be difficult.
Yeah.
They just don't have the understanding of the fact that or the perspective of how their service is being perceived.
So it's almost like they have, like, their magnetic north is just off a little bit.
Yeah.
It's pointed in the slightly
yeah.
wrong direction. It's they're working towards something and they're trying to do good, but it's just ever so slightly off because it's pointed at, you know, efficiency
well,
or...
you see, the thing is that it might not be consistently off. It might be that what works for patient A doesn't work for patient B. So you can't do it universally. So you provide the same treatment to the person, but understand different people require different things. Some people require you to be absolutely brutally honest and say it up front the way it is. You might need to lead them on a path of discovery before they get the bad news. And there's not a one-size-fits-all action. And it's very difficult to do in a big organization specifically because people want to go by the rule book. They want to supply the policy and they want to carry out the policy. And by definition, when you've disappointed a patient, it's because the policy hasn't worked. It's because the way you do things or the policy or procedure doesn't work.
Yeah.
So quoting a policy back at somebody or trying to fall back onto a policy doesn't work. And that's the issue.
So how do you balance that with, obviously, in a large organization, you have to have some policies and procedures and processes. So how do you strike that balance between kind of flexibility and adaptability and having the right sort of rules in place to ensure that consistent quality medical care is provided across the organization? How do you, I mean, what
it's absolutely, but that's the issue. Yeah. It's absolutely required that we have standards and procedures. Mm-hmm. And if somebody is ill, you have to go through certain processes. You've got to take observations every 4 hours. You have to do that. So a hell of a lot of this, it's why we're going back to saying that this is a huge culture change because it requires mentorship and it requires coaching all the time. So to debrief a situation and say to somebody, do you understand perhaps the way you said that and how you would have come across from the patient's perspective? Mm. There are a lot of people in the training workshops and stuff that we do. It's very rewarding because you can look at a sea of faces and suddenly realize that the penny has dropped.
But
the penny doesn't drop all at the same time in the same motion with people, which is customer experience, isn't it? So it's to get champions, and champions are not people that are identified. They are people that for whom the penny's dropped, to understand the implications and help coach people through it. And it's a long process. And I'm very grateful for the fact that you say that sounds good and you like the word thing. We're a long way away from having achieved what we want to. So,
but you guys have done a lot.
Yeah, we have. Right? But I mean, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. And that means that it's when this actually becomes an inbred culture with everybody that we will have succeeded to a certain extent.
To that point, and in terms of kind of measuring sort of where you guys are in the process, how do you tie what you are doing to the organization's bottom line? And I mean, you mentioned earlier that this has become a really important part of the corporate strategy.
Yeah.
How is that measured and tracked, and how have you built the business case for, you know, delivering great patient experience?
In the industry that we're in at the moment, I mean, and this is a worldwide issue, it's not a South African issue, the costs are a huge issue in terms of healthcare. But what's been happening is we've been focusing entirely on cost, on reduction of cost. And there's been this realization in the States that we've bought into now that, in fact, it's not about cost, it's about value. And the value is about quality over cost. So if you increase quality at the same cost, the value is higher. Or if you keep the quality the same at a lower cost, the value is still higher. So that's kind of the business case, is the relationship between the two. And also realizing that we're in an environment which is competitive and more competitive. And in fact, to achieve loyalty for people to come back means you've got to maximize their experience.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how we're pulling it together. And I can't claim credit for any of that. That's what's made my life easier as the patient experience guy, is because there was a commitment to the patient experience, but now it's become an absolute strategy of the company to put the patient first.
It's great to have that backing and to have it be an important part of the sort of overall strategy.
Correct.
Yeah. So the first time we met, you shared some exciting work that you've been doing in terms of gathering customer feedback and integrating it into the patient experience improvement process. Can you share a little bit about how you and your team are gathering insights and using this information?
We've partnered with a company in the United States called Press Ganey that are the single biggest healthcare patient satisfaction measuring company in the world or whatever. And they have a fantastic system where they are able to individualize per unit the relationship between what the particular branch or hospital is doing badly. And by badly, I mean as against itself. So it ranks 50 items and it takes the 50 items that score the least and links those in some very fancy way with what their customers rate as important. A combination of what you're doing badly with what the customer rates is important creates what is known as a priority index.
Yeah.
And that translates into, we've got corporate goals for corporate initiatives, which tie to those for the corporate. But each individual hospital then takes their own priority index and focuses on their priorities according to their patients, which makes it very focused and very easy to identify, which has been fantastic for us. And as I said to you, there were building blocks that we need to put in place around culture that this Press Ganey system has confirmed that we were certainly on the right track. We did a lot of tweaking, and at this stage, we have the voice of 55,000 patients. We've got 55,000 completed surveys in the last 18 months. And of course, strategically, every sort of quarter we focus on that and have discussions about where we are, and we measure the performance of every hospital.
One of the very interesting nuggets in what you've just said is that it factors in what's important to patients.
Correct.
That is where I've seen a lot of organizations miss the mark, is they'll measure things based on what they think is important.
Correct.
For the end user, the customer.
Correct.
And so what sounds very interesting and innovative about this is it sounds like a dynamic index which changes based.
Correct.
On segment.
Correct.
So it can be quite customized, but that there's always an element of what the end user is telling you.
Correct.
Is important.
And it also means that we're always going to have a priority index, because as your scores get higher and higher, there are still some that are going to be relatively lower than the others. That are
always
correlated to what's important to the patient. So you're always going to have something to focus on.
Yeah, and it'll change. And as you improve one thing, something else will bubble up. And
it fundamentally talks to outside in. And the issue about the brand promise, interestingly, is the brand promise is about service and about patient experience and expertise you can trust. But we completely accept that we're in a human environment and there are going to be mistakes. And we think we are measured far more on our response to the actual mistake. So service recovery was the first major initiative that we had in the company. And it was simply unhappy patient, make them happy.
Make them happy.
And make them happy might mean you can't fix their thing, but at least you can apologize, empathize, and say what you're going to do in the future to change this. In fact, I spoke about all of those workshops we held. I forgot about the fact that our first priority was actually we had a 5-hour workshop on complaint resolution.
Mm-hmm.
We focused on service recovery. And that links with that whole thing about the unwillingness to apologize in our culture. Not talking about MediClinic culture, talking about South African culture.
You
don't like saying I'm sorry.
Interesting. Voice of the customer research efforts are a very common first step for organizations that want to improve the way they manage experiences. What tips or suggestions would you have for someone who has been tasked with the responsibility of establishing a new voice of the customer function or research analytics function?
I think it's really important. And I mean, our commitment to Press Ganey in the States or whatever is a huge financial undertaking. And I mean, that's the Rolls Royce, is to get typical kind of researched customer feedback. If that's not possible from a budgetary point of view, I sincerely recommend that people have an outside facilitator come in and do a focus group. Get some specific people out. And focus groups are fascinating. It's all above, as you probably will know, it's all above board, because the facilitator or moderator will say, you know, that your client is behind the one-way glass listening to the conversation. So it's entirely ethical, but within 30 seconds they forget that the client's there, and you learn an extraordinary amount. We did 2 focus groups on pediatric patients specifically before we did the Press Ganey thing, and the learning was unbelievable. You know, there were 8 people in a focus group, but it still is a start to getting you to understand the customer's perspective and the whole outside in thing.
I mean, a focus group is probably the closest you can get to having the customer in the room with you.
Correct.
Telling, you know, guiding you, except they're not in the room with you. They're in the,
they're
on the other side of the glass, but that's interesting. Do you have any other sort of thoughts or suggestions or ideas that you want to share with listeners or those out there who are...
The biggest thing for me is to understand that this is, I don't care what industry you're in. Our industry is even more pertinent, and I'll talk to that in a minute. But in any industry you talk to, it's a culture thing. And so the message from the very top to the very bottom has got to be the same. And you've got to use the same terminology as you expect people to use. If you don't expect your customer service staff or whatever to quote a rule book, then don't you dare from a corporate office point of view quote a rule book at them. So it's about making sure that everybody understands that you went away from the customer.
Yeah.
You're either providing a service to someone who's serving a customer or you're servicing a customer.
Mm-hmm.
And so that message has got to be consistent. In our world, it's even easier to understand because they now prove that a superior customer experience can clinically affect the outcome of a treatment.
I mean, that's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
But it makes sense, too.
It does,
I mean, if somebody is happy and they're calm and they're not stressed out, it sort of makes sense.
The clinical outcome can and often is better.
Yeah, that's such a strong piece of information that you can use when trying to get stakeholders on board. It's very sort of...
It's quite interesting. I mean, an example that in our complaint resolution workshop, the case study that we use is taking your car for a service, because there's a whole process built around absolute efficiency. And the customer often loses because you end up in a queue where your file isn't. And it was very interesting. About 2 years ago, Car Magazine was giving a report back on their experience of a service. And the service was done very efficiently, but the seat that they sat on was broken and there wasn't coffee available, and the car that took them back to their work was quite a broken down car or whatever. And the comment at the end was, I think they should start paying more attention to the customer experience. And that had nothing to do with the service of the car. They were saying, The car came back perfectly serviced mm-hmm. and perfectly clean. But it became an experience that they were dreading every time they had to take the car in yeah. for a service.
And it's an interesting wake-up call, I think, for yeah. service providers, because yeah. this is only going to become more and more the case.
Absolutely.
I mean, as consumers have more options, they have more information,
Absolutely.
There will be more and more of these websites and apps that allow people to leave reviews for products and services.
Yeah.
This is just going to become more and more a part of the way that
Absolutely.
People make decisions. And so what it does is it forces organizations to really deliver on that brand promise.
Absolutely.
It holds people's feet to the fire, and it also makes the experience a bigger part of the overall consumption decision.
Yeah.
So I think that the world is in for an interesting couple of years as we use technology more and more. And as millennials, these sort of younger demographic of consumers enter their peak earnings years
yeah.
and become sort of a bigger spending cohort within the overall marketplace, I think it'll be very interesting to see how experience comes to the forefront as a real key
yeah.
differentiator.
And I mean, that's hugely pertinent in our industry as well. We always laugh when we speak to doctors in the emergency centers, for
mm-hmm.
example. They anecdotally said, yeah, we know we've got to cope with Dr. Google every day. Because a patient has Googled
yeah.
the situation and has an expectation of what's wrong with them and what the treatment is. And so that's very different to the expertise just telling you what was wrong and that's it. You have no other knowledge.
Yeah.
It's a different ballgame.
But then there are all kinds of ways that I suppose you could leverage that too in
yeah,
terms
yeah.
of self-diagnosis.
Oh, yes,
and
yeah, yeah.
I mean, so there are benefits and drawbacks
yeah, yeah.
and it's about, right, how do you take that technology and say, right, Google isn't going anywhere for the foreseeable future. So how do we work in tandem with this thing that's out there now that everybody uses?
But the very first learning is you've got to understand that at where we are at this stage in terms of technology,
mm-hmm.
somebody who's Googled their condition and walks in, a 25-year-old walks into the emergency unit, you cannot communicate with them the same way as you do with a 60-year-old that hasn't Googled it that's walked into the emergency unit
mm.
with the same condition. The way you deal with those two people fundamentally has to be different, even though the underlying problem might be the same.
And that goes back to your point that you brought up earlier
Absolutely.
About, you know, you can't just have a single way of dealing
Absolutely.
With people. You have to understand how to interface with individuals and how to provide the service in a way that's customized.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When we rebranded the company, one of the strongest findings of the research company that did the rebranding is that South African patients expect individualized care. Individualized is you treat me as Kevin, not the condition. It's not the shoulder or the pneumonia or whatever. It's Kevin.
Is that unique for the South African
no,
consumer?
No,
or
no,
is that
no, no.
sort of...
Okay. No, it isn't. But it wasn't led feedback. It came spontaneously from patients saying they felt like individualized care. And that's not different to anything else.
Yeah.
People expect individualized service.
Absolutely.
I don't want to be treated the same as the guy next to me.
Yeah.
Recognize that I'm someone.
And I suppose medical care, too, is something that is so personalized.
Absolutely.
And it could be something also that brings with it extra layer of sort of emotion and stress. Yeah.
But we're missing the boat as the customer or the patient is becoming more educated and more discerning and more
mm-hmm.
demanding,
mm-hmm.
understanding what their rights are.
So it's not coming from a place of malice.
No, not at all. Not at all.
It's about,
no, not at all.
You know, reminding people to
Absolutely.
Think about the end user, the patient,
Absolutely.
The customer, what do they want?
Yeah, and you've got to be very careful about assuming that it's coming from a place of malice, because then you're going to lose.
Absolutely.
Because it doesn't. It comes from a very sincere desire to make things efficient, to whatever.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. This has been really interesting. And
pleasure.
Yeah.
Pleasure.
Thank you for listening to my interview with Kevin. During the coming months, I hope to bring you more conversations with customer experience experts and individuals who are passionate about customer centricity. Please check out my website at julia-allfelt.com and sign up for the mailing list to receive updates when new podcasts go live.